attached to him, and I wouldn't make him do something he doesn't want to do, even if I really needed it. What's 12 hours of sleep? Nothing. Gone in the blink of an eye.
"I will do it, brother," said my totem in a hollow, heavy-sounding voice, and then warm air again began to blow into my face. "Entering the second," Draco reported, and strange things began to happen to the ring in the design mode. It started to melt, like a piece of butter in the sun. Was this really the result of the totem's breath? I should have been happy that it was working, but a feeling of foreboding rose up within me. Something wasn't right. I had to prevent the ring from melting entirely. It had to remain whole.
"Entering the third," said my totem through gritted teeth, or rather fangs, in Draco's case,
when I started to fight for the ring to stay whole. Its form had to be round, 2 sockets for the gems, a perfect surface. A few seconds went by, but the ring continued to melt. Either I was lacking concentration and experience, or I was doing everything totally wrong. Stop. Didn't I just ask my totem for help? Why don't I make use of my shaman skills? The 3 seconds it took me to enter the spirit summoning mode seemed an eternity to me. I freed up one of the active slots without even a glance at what I was chucking, I'd get it back later, and began to summon the spirit of petrification. I had no idea whether one even existed, but I really needed it right now.
"You have summoned the lesser spirit of petrification."
This was a great relief. I didn't even have to summon spirits. By the looks of it, the design mode combined beautifully with the spirit summoning mode, so the newly summoned bodiless entities started to circle around the ring, returning it to its initial shape. That's it. It's as good as done now. Draco will finish frying the ring, and the Patriarch will give me my reward. I even managed to sigh in relief until the next piece of news tore all my plans to shreds.
"Fourth!"
shouted the totem, and the spirits that I'd summoned evaporated as if they'd never been there. I summoned them a couple more times, but as soon as they flew to the ring, which started to melt again, the spirits vanished. They weren't the right level.
"You have summoned the spirit of petrification, +1 to spirituality, total 25.
Now I could clearly feel an inferno raging around me, and periodically a message flashed before my eyes that I'd lost 1 to 2 hit points on account of the blowing hot air. A totem's fire cannot harm its master, but the air that he heats up is oblivious to the fact that the totem means me no harm. The summoning of the ordinary petrification spirits did not come easy to me. I felt my head growing heavy, some strange hum spreading through my ears. On second thoughts, it might have been the dragon's fire. And there was an unpleasant metallic taste in my mouth. The ring became whole once again.
"Fifth!"
If the coarse voice that just sounded was any indication of his current state, Draco wasn't feeling too great right now. The worst part was that I could do nothing to help my brother, because the ordinary petrification spirits also began to disappear. The dragon's 5th acceleration level took them out even before they reached the ring, which once again started to lose shape. So there was little I could do other than,
"You have summoned the great spirit of petrification, +2 to spirituality, total 27.
I waved away the announcement that I would be losing 10% of my hit points every 5 seconds, because the summoned spirit was beyond my rank,
and tried not to breathe, because breathing fire was no picnic. The no-air bar appeared before my eyes, helpfully telling me that I had 63 seconds before living would become difficult. The penalty for the summons only had the chance to appear 3 times, the second of which had me thinking that I was about to lose my concentration and scream, when Draco squealed more than howled, "Six!" I don't know what the dragon had started to breathe at me, but the system told me that I was now in a lake of molten rock and losing 100 hit points a second. Obviously, the initial figure was much higher, but I really liked the footnote. My totem had made the lake, so I received only 0.1% of the damage. This brought little comfort, considering that even great spirits were unable to come near the ring, with the dragon now breathing fire of 6th level of acceleration at its original physical form. Or not at the original. It mattered little. The spirits couldn't manage it. As far as I understood, there was no one higher than the great spirits, apart from the pair who'd earlier told me how small and unready I was. The ring started to melt once again. The dragon was growing hoarse. The fire was roaring. The patriarch had probably left such a shocking scene. He may even hand us a bill later for destroying his hall. So I gritted my teeth and, disregarding all the warnings, both from the system as well as my own brain, started yet another summons. Supreme Ones, I kinda need you right now.
You have summoned the Supreme Spirit of the Lower World, +4 to spirituality, total 31. +1 rank to water spirits, total 4. Your totem has gained a level. Your totem has gained a level.
We have come, Great One. You have passed the trial. Henceforth, you will be able to call us, but no more than once a week. You are not a high shaman yet. A penalty is incurred by anyone who spends time in our world. You can find out about it from any shaman trainer. And now, release your totem, brother. It is time he had a rest.
Character class update. Class Elemental Shaman has been replaced by Great Shaman. +10 to reputation with the supreme spirits of the higher and lower worlds. This reputation cannot be increased on account of the first kill achievement. You have received the new rank of Blessed Artificer, current rank 3. Item acquired, Holy Ring of Dryall. Item class, Epic, Unique. Minimum level, 320. Stats, +12,800 to intellect, +5,400 stamina, +80 energy, +1,400 agility, +1,400 strength. When casting a spell, you have 30% chance of an instantaneous free repeat cast. 2 gemstone sockets, upgradable. The cost and level of upgrade can be confirmed with an advisor and master. Holy Ring special properties, +200 to faith, +200 to reputation with Goddess Iluna. These effects are applied to the first player to wear the ring, after which this property of the ring will disappear. Restriction, only usable by priests and paladins. Quest, The Path of the Shaman, Step 3. The trial to become a great shaman is completed. Seek out a shaman trainer to be given the next step.
As soon as the messages stopped flashing past me, I dismissed Draco and opened my eyes, finding myself in a 2-meter-wide melted crater. Its entire perimeter was crowded with vampires, their weapons pointed in my direction.
Bows, spears, swords. Around 10, level 200 bloodsuckers stood around me, and it was clear that only an enormous feat of willpower stopped them from attacking me. Your reputation with the Patriarch of the Vampires has fallen by 24,000 points. Current level, hatred.
The Master of the Enemy, said the Patriarch from his throne in a heavy, terrible voice, full of hatred. Only because you have fulfilled my conditions will I forgo sending you to the Greylands. You will be taken back to the Guardian's Glade, after which I, the Patriarch of Vampires, head of the Reardelox clan, shall declare you the enemy of all the vampires in Barleona. You may take the ring with you, and I shall also give you a certain scroll, because that was the will of the victors. You shall not receive the 10 cursed objects for which you asked earlier. Let Tartarus be my judge. Leave us, the Patriarch told his fighters. The Master of the Enemy will not do me any harm.
This NPC sure came with a strange script. He's prepared to incur the wrath of the Dark God, just not to hand over 10 cursed items to me. And there's my new title as well, Master of the Enemy. Did he mean Draco? By the looks of it, the encounter between the head vampire and the flying lizard didn't leave the best of memories behind, if it had dropped my reputation all the way to hatred. Now, Hanastaria won't just lynch me, but will make sure my next 100 million years are filled with pain and suffering. Destroying her chance of meeting such an NPC is an achievement in itself. Although, on second thoughts, the Patriarch only spoke of me, so maybe his wrath would not extend to those accompanying me. I care little for the enmity between you and the dragons, I replied to him. They have left Barleona long ago and will never return. My totem is not a dragon, but an incarnation. I realize that it's useless to try to explain this after my totems destroyed part of your hall, so I'll skip any explanations. You can take me back now.
For 2,000 years, vampires were at war with the dragons. For 2,000 years, they destroyed, burned, and persecuted us. We managed to bring down only 3 lords of the air. But afterwards, each death was revenged. Their vengeance was meted out furiously and mercilessly. Entire clans were eliminated. When, of all the vampires, only my clan remained, the head of the dragons came to me and demanded that I yield. Either I bowed my head and accepted his power, or all the remaining vampires would be destroyed. I subdued my pride with fetters of steel and bowed before the victor because I had to think of my people. I was handed a scroll that I had to give either to a dragon or to his master. Then the dragons departed forever from our world. Some vampires never accepted our submission before the flying serpents, and left my clan, founding their own clans throughout Barleona. And I remained here to remember forever the lesson that we were taught by the dragons. When you summoned your totem, which turned out to be a dragon. For the first time in 10,000 years, I remembered what fear was. Fear before the inevitable. I did not enjoy this long-forgotten feeling, so I will do all I can never to feel it again. This is for you.
A scroll appeared in the patriarch's hands, which then floated towards me through the air. Well, well, even personally handing over an item to me was no longer possible for this red-eyed NPC. He was prepared to use a crazy amount of mana for levitation, so as not to approach me. Maybe he should see a shrink or something? It's as clear as day this imitator is beset by a whole bunch of complexes. As soon as I took the scroll, one of the vampires appeared next to me, his face full of revulsion, offered me a hand, and I found myself in the Guardian's glade. The vampire disappeared. The guys were nowhere to be seen, having probably gone into the tent to sleep. So I sat under the oak and began to examine the patriarch's present. I removed the wrapping and stared at the paper scroll. Item acquired. The Treatise on a Healthy Diet for Dragons. Description. Dragons kept a close watch on their figures. If they were to eat one too many cows or sheep, indigestion was guaranteed. For this reason, the High Dragon developed a diet that would allow dragons to enjoy their life to the full. On use, you will learn a unique cooking recipe, Dragon Porridge, required cooking profession, level plus one, which will increase the growth of all dragon stats by 100% for 24 hours. Restriction only for dragons.
Dragon Porridge? They've got to be kidding me!
Chapter 9. The Lieutenant.
Ding!
The sound of a letter arriving in the mailbox cut through my sleep and returned me to Barleona. I'd have to dig around in the settings and switch off these annoying sound effects. I could easily ignore it when awake, but when asleep, it sounded like a loud gong hitting me on the head. Who the heck is after me? With sleep-ridden and thus totally clueless eyes, I selected my mail and opened the first letter that popped into sight.
Hi, I'm a 219-level warlock. I'm prepared to discuss conditions under which I would enter your clan. I require...
The sheer impudence of it shook me completely awake. What the heck was conditions for entering your clan supposed to mean? Wasn't he getting something mixed up here? I read over the message one more time and raised my eyebrows in surprise. I just wasn't getting the meaning of this text. What did he want? As soon as I deleted that letter, another popped up in front of me.
Hi! Hi! My name is Droof, the Handman. I want to join your clan. I'm already 17. Can do PvP soon. Let's meet at the Anhurst Square tomorrow.
Full of mistakes and all in caps, probably trying to create a bigger impression or something. What's happening? After deleting this nonsense and putting the sender on the blacklist, I skipped reading the third letter and went straight to the root folder of the mailbox. Once there, I ended up staring in incomprehension at the happily glowing 847, the number of unread messages. Awake now? The painfully familiar voice made me glance over my gaming avatar to check that my lower half was still under the blanket. Anastaria.
Good.
I asked Plinto not to let anyone into the tent and sent Slate out for a walk. Everyone is gathering in 30 minutes. Here's some food. Eat it, and don't let anything disturb you.
The girl handed me an appetizing piece of meat.
Tasty?
Asked Stacy once I'd finished, and then sat right next to me.
Cooked it myself, especially for you.
Thank you, of course. But why are you suddenly taking the trouble? I probably still hadn't quite woken up, since I didn't understand what was going on in the slightest.
Did you receive the letter with the copper ore?
Asked Anastaria, ignoring my question. I have no idea. I have 800 unread messages, so if there's one with copper ore, I'll need to dig for it.
Just 800?
Anastaria's eyebrows flew up.
My admirers are a shadow of their former selves, by the looks of it.
What?
Yesterday there was only one topic of discussion on the forums. My jumping ship to some unknown Sea Thistles clan, headed by a certain man. At the same time, many took note of the fact that the player's name is short, just a couple of syllables long, and that his level is under 100. Everyone thinks that you mothballed this character a long time ago and finally decided to return to playing him. If you think of how many declarations of eternal love, oaths of loyalty, and other rubbish I get every day, it would have been foolish to think that some of those players wouldn't try to join our clan. After all, it's not that easy to get into Phoenix, while here you are, some unknown low-level Sea Thistles. Sorry to be blunt about it, but 800 in one night? Not all that much, really. In any case, your next 2 or 3 days are going to be pretty lively. I advise you to configure your mail and turn off the sound. Trust me, those pings could easily drive you nuts. Ding! You've received 14 new messages. Do you wish to view them? All right. You can sort out the letters as we travel. Now let's decide on the best way for me to help the clan.
Plinto had taken the stat training upon himself, and the spaz-tard is quite welcome to it, so I propose that Klutzer is trained in analyzing situations, and Leidy, if I'm not mistaken about his disposition, in drafting various agreements. After all, real-life agreements and game agreements are totally different things. I'm sorry, but our clan agreement has so many holes in it that you may, for instance, freely get into the clan treasury and not worry too much about the consequences. No need to look at me like that. I remember the phrase, operations with the clan treasury require the approval of the head or the treasurer well enough. It's just that you probably don't know that operations worth 1 copper coin aren't subject to clan registration, but are written off as minor errors. In the course of a day, any player can carry out over 10,000 transactions, and if he sets an imitator to withdraw just 1 copper coin per transaction, he could end up siphoning 4 gold off the clan's account each day. It may seem like pennies, but think what would happen if you had 1,000 players like that. Neither you nor the treasurer would have any idea where the money was going. We pointed out such a loophole to the corporation at one time, but they suggested that we clearly set out the permitted transaction amount for the clan treasury and use that to close the loophole. By the looks of it, this oversight has a prominent role in the operations of the rogue clans, which specialize in theft. There's a ton of details like this in the game, like Elenium's defection to Phoenix and his taking that quest with him, for example. I can help Leidy keep the clan safe from such things. That'd be a great idea. Once again, Anastaria had managed to surprise me. And here was me, naively thinking that I had an ideal clan agreement, which even Barcina praised. You'd think she would have a good grasp of these things, being a mercenary. But that wasn't the case at all.
There is one but, however.
Anastaria immediately brought me back to Earth.
If I will be acting as your real deputy for the entire 3 months I'm with you, I would like to be treated as your deputy, and not as a spy and an enemy.
What do you mean? Who's treating you like that?
You. Who else? Last night both quests got updated, and if we decide to stay true to our roles of head and deputy, it would make sense for you to tell me what happened.
Stacy, I started, but immediately checked myself. She really has set it up rather beautifully. She was prepared to invest real effort into developing the clan, help with closing the loopholes and with training, and then completely push me into a corner. If you want help, hand over the information. And what was I supposed to do now? Tell her to take a long hike? That's probably what 99% of men with, avatar dolls of steel would have done. But I must swallow my pride. I'm not a lone hero, but someone with a clan, albeit a small one, behind me. So I'd have to share the information. But how much of it I should share was something I'll have to think over carefully.
You haven't fallen asleep, have you?
No, I'm not asleep. I'm thinking.
What about?
Where I should begin my tale. So much happened yesterday that I don't know where to start.
Start with Beatwick and the dragon's words that you are his son.
What's that got to do with anything? We're talking about the Dark Forest now.
Something tells me that it all began there, smiled the girl.
Not exactly, but fine. He's what all the fuss is about. I paused and summoned Draco. The time has come to show him off. He's big enough now, and in need of constant leveling up, but I keep hiding him like some poor relative.
"Hello, everyone," said Draco happily.
But with one look at Anastaria, he did the last thing I'd have expected. He entered fighting mode.
"Brother, a siren is here. I'll hold her off. Run!"
"No!" I shouted when the first ball of flame flew towards Anastaria. You had to give it to the girl. She managed to put a bubble on herself just in time, so the totem didn't do her any damage.
"You can't attack her!" "She's a siren! An enemy!"
shouted the totem, flashing his eyes at the girl, but stopped his attack. I'd never seen Draco so agitated. I must find the time to read up on why dragons were at war with vampires and sirens.
"Right. Back you go."
I dismissed the totem. "I'll summon you later and we'll have a chat. And remember, no attacking anyone until I tell you to. The war is over."
"But you'll be careful, right?"
Draco warned me as he began to fade.
"Sirens are treacherous."
"A siren?" I looked at my deputy with some interest after my totem disappeared. If the word shock could be applied to this girl, Anastaria was definitely in such a state as she stared at the place that had been occupied by my dragon just a moment ago. "So, it's not that you've learned to control the poison. You simply changed your race? A siren paladin? Sounds nuts!"
"A dragon? Son and brother of a dragon,"
uttered Stacy slowly, staring into space.
"Did you go through modification, too?"
"What do you mean?"
"You speak of a change of race so calmly you'd think you've come across this phenomenon before. Let me give you the good news. Your case is the second in the entire, incomplete 11 years of my playing the game. Only the recreation of a character allows you to change your race. At least, that's what players are supposed to think. 6 years ago, I became a siren and have now met my bitter enemy. You are aware that our races were at war?"
"What's the difference what our races were to each other? I became a son and brother of a dragon when I incarnated my totem. In Beatwick, I came across a scenario that..."
"No need to continue,"
Anastaria interrupted me.
"I get it already. In Beatwick, you stumbled across one of the launch points of the scenario, made good use of it, became acquainted with the local copies of the High Priestess and the Princess, managed to befriend them, then the battle. In Anhurst, the Princess gave you the quest with Slate. You still haven't shared it with me, by the way. And the High Priestess gave you the quest for the search of the Stone of Light. And here the legend about the Patriarch and the Dark Forest pops up. They've probably been wanting to launch it for some time, but no occasion presented itself. This is why the Guardian turned up, who gave you the quest, and then you invited us. That's clear enough. But what happened yesterday remains a mystery to me. The present quests have been updated, but no new ones appeared, a possibility clearly mentioned in the agreement. So, it looks like you didn't get anything. How could such an NPC fail to give a quest? He's not been put into circulation for nothing. So it looks like you messed up. A dragon shaman. The Patriarch of Vampires and a dragon?" Anastaria nearly screamed the last words. "You summoned your totem in the presence of the Patriarch? Please don't tell me you've gone and done that." I didn't even know what to say to the girl's onslaught. It had been a while since I've seen Anastaria this worked up. Truth be told, I'd never seen her like this.
"Arrgh! How? Didn't you know that vampires and dragons are enemies? What kind of a dragon are you if you don't even know the history of your race? Right, hang on a moment. I'm dawdling. Why the heck did you even need to summon your totem in Patriarch's presence? Man!"
"What?" Anastaria's agitation transferred to me now. "Don't you think you're going a bit OTT with all this? Yes, I have hatred with the Patriarch, but this concerns me alone as the owner of the dragon. It doesn't affect other people. What else do you want? Did the quests get updated?" "Yes, they did. It's easy enough to find the location of the Lord of the Fallen's base. And as for the Stone of Light, you have the High Priestess's quest. It's marked by a dot on the map. I'll bet you any money that this is where we need to go. That's it. We're as good as done. Everyone gets bonuses, and there's general jubilation. Stop jumping down my throat already. If you hadn't logged out yesterday, you could have gone to the Patriarch yourself. You would have managed to get at least 100 quests out of him, sure as day. So the entire raid, because, as you said, under the agreement the quests spread to everyone else, would have been sitting and scratching their heads at what, bring 10 pine cones of doom to the Patriarch of the Vampires, was supposed to mean.
Well, you've got me there," said the girl, who had immediately calmed down. "And there was me thinking you wouldn't figure it all out, but I just get worked up and you spill the beans. I guess it didn't work. Fine. Tell me what happened next."
"Tell you what? Are you sure you haven't gotten confused, pretty lady?" I asked angrily. I'm just no good at switching so fast between emotions, and I have a habit of finishing what I started.
What do you mean, tell me?
Exactly that. I'm all ears. The girl's smile grew even wider.
Man, in the last few weeks, you've demonstrated such unique survival abilities in the world of big money that you've attracted attention, and not only that of clan heads, but a multitude of scam artists for whom swindling a successful player is their main purpose in the game. The avalanche of the letters you received is a drop in the ocean of what's in store for you. You have to learn how to communicate with players of every level, and here we have two possibilities. Either I help you, or you'll be learning from your own mistakes. It is, of course, your choice, but if you choose the former, we have to agree from the start that you share any information, and it is information I need, with me immediately and in full. I can't give you sound advice based on fragments of sentences.
Judging by the way you're offering your help, you're not even considering the possibility that I'll choose my own mistakes, are you?
No,
the girl shook her head.
You seem to be a sensible person, capable of listening to a woman's point of view, rather than one of the alpha males for whom there are only two types of opinion— theirs and the wrong one. For example, go outside and try do not panic.
What's he got to do with this?
What indeed? He is your second advisor. Like the rest of the raid, he had his quest updated and, according to the agreement, has a right to know how it happened. And fishing everything out of you down to the smallest detail isn't that much of a challenge for him. Especially if you're unprepared.
Yeah, right. So you, being so kind and magnificent, are willing to prepare me to face the monstrous do not panic, eh? I can't call what you're doing right now anything other than a scam. So what do you want for the great honor of training me, then?
Nothing extraordinary. We agree that I will have the opportunity to ask you any question to which you will give the fullest possible answer. That's it. For that, I am prepared to help you.
Just a question? And not to transfer or hand something over? Just information?
Exactly. Items are not my highest priority.
Tell that to the chest pieces, I muttered, and tried to think hard. What could Anastaria ask that I would really prefer not to tell her? How to find the dragons? That's stupid. She's a siren, so it would make little sense for her to go visiting dragons. They'd go into patriarch mode, blocking any attempts to speak to them, and chuck her out of their world.
What else?
How to become a shaman? Total nonsense, since there's probably plenty of information about that out there. The chess set riddles I was going to throw to her anyhow, because I need the answers. And that's it. I can't think of anything else. So, on one hand, I should win in this exchange, but knowing Anastaria, she's being just a bit too approachable. Something isn't right here.
Fine, I finally forced out a reply. I will answer your question, only let's be clear on what exactly you're going to do. I can help is too vague. It could mean just about anything, down to tying my shoelaces, and nothing more useful than that. Sending you an agreement, it covers everything. At one point, I signed a similar one with Ekeler, so I still have the template. If the wording suits you, you can proceed to tell me exactly what went down yesterday.
When the majority of the players returned to reality, I told my fighters the reason that Illenium left and why you joined the clan. I stayed within the limits of the confidentiality agreement, but I gave them the basic idea. I signed the agreement and then gave an accurate account of what happened last night. In the morning, I woke up to the avalanche of clan applications and then saw you snooping on me.
So it looks like, aside from hatred, you managed to get a 320-level ring for paladins and priests out of the encounter, said Anastaria thoughtfully. Why are you so damn lucky? Even I don't have anything higher than 300. All right, we'll return to the ring later. Would you mind if we invited Klutzer?
The girl asked me.
It's time he started learning.
Agreed. I'll call him over. Klutzer, come into the tent. There's stuff we need to talk about.
I wonder, will Plinto stop him or obey your order?
Muttered the girl musingly.
I did ask him not to let anyone into the tent. 1 point to Mayan, she added when she saw Klutzer come in. Plinto's your man. Congratulations. All right, let's begin. The majority of the players have only one question now. What happened during the night? Our aim is to produce a decent explanation from yesterday's events without revealing any secrets, because under the agreement, Do Not Punic will be demanding full information, and he will be within his right. The quests have been renewed, and people like him are real sticklers for details. So we have to figure out what we can tell him and what we can't. Here's what I'm proposing to do in view of what happened on account of Mayan's totem, and, most importantly, why I'm proposing it.
Attention, everyone! General meeting in 5 minutes! I shouted as soon as I came out of the tent. I have information that I intend to share under the conditions of our agreement. There is no need to surround me now. I'll be telling everyone everything a little later in any case. I immediately stopped the players who had begun to approach me. It was Anastaria's suggestion that any attempts to refer to non-compliance with signed documents had to be shut down. This was quite dangerous, because there was no telling which way the imitator's brains would spin if it came to any disputes. But if I made a clear announcement of my intention to comply with my own agreement conditions, it would be hard for them to find fault. Moreover, as the raid leader, I had to draw attention to my good self and ramp up interest in, anticipation of, the meeting. Simple psychology. Nothing unlawful. So, yesterday, when the majority of the players logged out to reality, I began with the requisite reference to the fact that it was their own fault, letting it slip that I didn't mean all of them, just the majority. Let them look at each other and wonder which of them was around and is withholding information. Few know that only those unable to log out had stayed behind. A vampire scout entered the glade, one that had not been changed. Yes, aside from those we've come across, this forest also has unchanged vampires. He used a portal and brought me to the camp of the local partisans, and I spoke to their leader. You can all see the result. The quest was updated. I managed to find out the cause of the taint and what it is we have to do. The boss refused to tell me the place where the tear was stuck into the ground, insisting that the war between them and the fallen was an internal affair of the Dark Forest. They will neither help nor hinder us. Anastaria had laid out so many arguments why we shouldn't tell the others about the Patriarch that in the end I agreed with her. I may have hatred with him, but she, when she goes back to Phoenix, will have a chance of finding him and getting some quests out of him. When I voiced these suspicions, Anastaria smiled and proposed an agreement whereby Sea Thistles would get 10% of any loot that Phoenix could manage to get out of the Patriarch from the moment this promise is made. This agreement was made on Eckler's behalf. Of all things, I've never heard of such a method of signing agreements on behalf of another clan. So after swapping a couple of phrases with Klutzer and raising our profit to 15%, I agreed. The text of the agreement appeared before my eyes, sporting Eckler's signature just a minute later. He signed under the girl's words, and that was that. The door to the Patriarch was now closed to me anyhow. I summoned my totem during my meeting with the Vance. Him. With these words, I summoned Draco. I had debated this point quite furiously with Anastaria. She was very insistent that I should show off my dragon, switching all the attention from the vampire boss to him. I kept refusing, arguing that he was still too small. If people were to see him now, they'd start hunting and killing him, bringing his level down by 10 levels per death. All in all, my arguments were quite childish. While Anastaria contended that I'd have to hurry up with leveling my dragon, and that this would be pretty difficult if I kept hiding him from everyone. And I also had to give some kind of explanation for the increase in my rank. Yesterday, everyone had left an elemental shaman behind, and they were suddenly seeing a great one. Ranks don't go up just like that. You have to do something extraordinary for that to happen. In the end, I'd agreed to show Draco. So now I was watching the reactions of the players very closely. There had been all kinds of creatures in Barleona in the 15 years of the game, but no one had come across a dragon before. Before the events in Beatwick, no one had even believed they existed. And suddenly, here's a shaman with a pet dragon. With the help of the dragon, I've fulfilled certain class-based conditions and become a great shaman. But I also learnt of a certain dragon trait, hatred with vampires. I discovered this last night, when the local partisan boss almost sent me for respawn. So I'm not a suitable contact for this group. If we should run across any more unchanged ones, I propose that we send Anastaria and Do Not Panic, my deputies, to communicate with them. What I just described is exactly what happened during the night. Let the Emperor be my judge if I lied. I waved away the message informing me that I was summoning the main imitator in Malabar as a witness too often, and that from my next summons I would start receiving terrible penalties, and looked at the players. As Stacy had pointed out, I wasn't facing a bunch of gamer kids who had just seen a dragon for the first time, but the top managers of the largest game corporations. They would not take even their own word at face value unless it has been verified in writing and certified by a notary. After I'd honestly retold last night's events, it would be impossible not to believe me. You couldn't deceive the Emperor. He doesn't check just the formal side of things when something unsaid is equated with the truth. Oh, no! If you wanted your words to be verified, you had to tell enough of the truth to pass the test. Any play on words counts as a lie for him. In a few hours' time, having gathered into one big group, we ventured out from the Guardian's Glade. According to our scouts, there was no one for a radius of a couple of kilometers around, so the raid wasn't in danger of running across another Ash. The option of using flying pets to travel was ruled out after one of the players mounted his griffin and flew up. As soon as he rose 10 meters above the ground, he immediately disappeared. According to the map, upon which the player was indicated by a small dot, and the swearing in the raid chat, he was thrown right back to the entrance of the dark forest where we'd been initially teleported by the High Priestess. The player tried to fly back to us from there, but as he got close to us, he disappeared again upon landing. He was back at the start of the dark forest, and once again there was much swearing. It became clear that only travel on foot was possible in this location. According to the unlucky player, he needed 2 hours to get to where we were. So, we would have to wait.
Elementals, 200 meters, plus 300. 8 heads, 2 full sets, 20 meters apart. Mage support, 20, plus 350, 0 meters apart.
Plinto's economical report appeared before my eyes in the raid chat. As soon as our raid group was back together, we moved towards the center of the forest. All possible paths vanished within an hour of walking, so after sending the scouts ahead, we started to beat our way through the trees, leaving a narrow path behind us. The mages, to give them their due, managed to burn 100 meters of the forest in less than 5 minutes by using their mana prudently, allowing the raid to keep moving. No one was keen on trying to fight through the thicket. In the end, after 3 hours of this kind of movement, we'd put quite a distance between the Guardian's Glade and us as we searched for Midial's troops. Now, finally, Plinto had run across them. I couldn't help feeling pleased that I'd managed to understand at first glance what that potentially incomprehensible text actually meant, a sure sign that I was getting the hang of it.
"The rogues take the mages, keep half-stunned, and interrupt the casts of the rest," Anastaria said as soon as we called a council. "Elementals are more difficult. One tank won't be able to handle a full set. He'll get mowed down. But the distance between the mobs will allow us to pull them one by one, so it shouldn't be too bad. Then we..."
"Elementals and mages, 50 meters. ETA to raid, 30 seconds. You've been spotted."
Plinto's next message interrupted Anastaria's lecture. The girl spent a couple of seconds looking at Do Not Panic, somewhat lost, but then the spark appeared once more in her eyes, and my deputy began to muster the raid.
"Phoenix, drive Alpha. Hell, you're on the fire ones. Undigit, the water ones are yours. Tamsalat, get the air ones. Killer, try to stop the earth ones. We hit single target only. If I see anyone using AoE spells, I'll rip them a new one. All rogues to the mages. Stun them. Small fries, 300 meters back into the forest now. All the priests 20 paces back and get anyone who's down back up. Here we go, guys. This is gonna get messy.
Visitors, 20 meters. Hitting you in 10 seconds. Moving very fast. I can't manage to..."
With a wild crash, the trees 20 meters from us fell down, and for the first time in my gaming life, I saw a fire elemental. Before, in pictures, holograms, and video, this mob didn't look all that big or scary. But now, it was a nearly 2-meter-tall pillar of fire, moving in the air about a meter off the ground and burning off even the mist from underneath it. The players were engulfed in a wave of warm air. After bursting into our clearing, the elemental halted for a second, looked around, and, with a strange screech, headed toward us. Behind what was presumably its back, pillars of water, earth, and air started to appear, figures of human mages flashing between them. The guests had arrived.
"I'm taking the flaming ones," shouted Hellfire, throwing an axe at the impressive spectacle and pulling another with his tanking ability.
"I'm on Hell and Undigit,"
shouted Anastaria, starting to pour healings into the tank, whose health started to slide.
"Plinto, the mages! Killer, slow the earth! Don, help with the mages! Man, why are you still here? Get back now! Minus two. Five are in stun. Crowd control on the rest. Illinium, get Brast back up. Some priest, damn you, move it! Mayan, get out of the way. Beat it already. Hell, I'm running out of mana. Hunker down, I'll recharge. Everyone, hit the mages. Elementals have immunity slapped on them.
Unlike in Beatwick, right now the raid was functioning like a single organism. Six of the elementals were being held off by the tanks, and the two remaining were constantly crowd-controlled by the mages. The healers were pouring healings into the tanks without sparing any mana, and the main body of the players were focused on the group of level plus 350 mages. Not wanting to be the odd one out, I started to summon spirits, but all of them had pretty much zero effect. The difference between a 68-level shaman and such a high-level mob was just too big. All that I could do was summon strengthenings into the tanks and restorations into the healers.
Minus Undigget! Hell, take the mobs! Priests, resurrect on cooldown! Plinto, switch to the elementals! Try stunning them! Get those mages down already!
Man, Ants in the Panta appeared next to me, downing some restorative potion. It's not the mages who are keeping the shields up around the elementals. What? The mages aren't the ones keeping up the shields on the elementals. Someone else is doing that.
Plinto, did you hear that?
I didn't doubt the High Shaman's words for a second. When you have 12 players already sent for respawn while the enemy's only lost 10 mages, doubts can go hang.
Find him!
On it!
After putting a 20-second stun on another elemental, the rogue stealthed and rushed into the forest at top speed.
Damn, we're doing something wrong, whispered Ants in the Panta,
wincing at the unpleasant squelching sound as one of the elementals tore away from Hellfire, flew over to a group of our mages, and smashed into them. Four players lost.
Elementals are counterparts of the spirits, so why are they on the side of the fallen?
The lieutenant, 300 meters. Dark priest, plus 400. I'm gone.
Plinto's frame went down to zero in less than 2 seconds and became gray. The rogue had gone for a 6-hour rest. There were only 2 priests in the raid, and they could only resurrect 1 player every 5 minutes, so given that almost half the raid was already lying dead, Plinto's turn wasn't going to come around any time soon.
Natalie, what do you know about elementals? You're supposed to be a shaman, no? Out with it! Quit dragging your feet, we're running out of time! Killer, chuck the elementals, we can't do anything to them! Destroy as many mages as you can,
came the order from Anastaria.
Nothing special.
Ants in the Panta finally snapped out of it. At this point, all 4 elementals had surrounded Tamsalat, and only 23 fighters remained alive.
Elementals are warriors of the elements, while spirits are the souls of the elements. They're like brothers. At level 100, you will gain the ability to summon an elemental for a few minutes, depending on your rank. Similar to a totem, but temporary.
How do you communicate with them? A crazy idea popped into my head. If you could talk to elementals, what if it were possible to strike a deal with these ones?
Through the astral plane, said Ants in the Panta slowly,
and suddenly her eyes lit up.
That's it. We can subdue them. Just give me a minute.
With these words, the girl sat in lotus pose and, what surprised me the most, began to rise above the ground. Not very far, but looks like shamans are quite the high flyers, with a special relationship to gravity and all that. Strange that when I ended up in the astral plane, there was a message from Ekeler that I'd disappeared. But now this girl simply rose up. Is that because each shaman has a different way of entering the astral plane? Or did I disappear in the Guardian's Glade because I ended up there by mistake?
Stacy, bubble over ants in the panta!
I thought it right that the Lady Shaman be protected from being interrupted by any mob that might suddenly break loose.
I can't! I threw it on Hell recently. It's still in cooldown. What did you guys think up?
Only after Anastaria's reply did I realize that the bubble lasts merely a few seconds and wouldn't be much